America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another excitingly fiery episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo Dinolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, so we are now officially, well, really unofficially, in summer. It
you
is
mean
hot
it was
as...
90 degrees for no reason this week?
Right. Yeah. So this episode is June 1st, 2018, first show of the month. God, it feels like it. Some shit went down this week, as usual, but some of it is just really silly shit, and some of it is horrifying. Yeah. But we also,
if shit didn't go down, we wouldn't have a show, so it's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Of course, we also have some good entertainment news, including somebody is once again letting a comic book artist direct a movie. The last few times that's happened, it has not worked out well.
No.
Except for that one time, and that was only because he was co-directing it. Yes. But we also have some political news, including the realization that, you know, there's good things and bad things about democracy. The good thing about democracy is that everybody gets a chance. The bad thing about democracy is everybody gets a chance. As a candidate for the Virginia House of Representatives sort of presented this week.
Yeah.
Also, remember that North Korea summit that was supposed to not, that was going to happen and then didn't happen?
Yeah.
Well, we have some shocking news to share with you that you totally did not see coming.
Yeah.
And arrived in a really big envelope.
Yep. We got some Netflix shit too. And we also found something neat over at the Pompeii disaster site, you know, near Mount Vesuvius. Yeah, we found something new over there, which is kind of a fairly regular event, because they're still finding shit all these years later. But before we get into all of that, Phil, what are you up to this week, or have been up to, or we're doing, or something in that line?
Yeah, so I finished off Ordination by Daniel M. Snow Ford, rather, because I got that wrong last week.
Yeah.
And went right into the second book of that trilogy, and not realizing that it wasn't complete yet, so...
That is just the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah, so now I'm going to be finishing the second book, and then I'm going to be like, oh, god damn it, hurry up and get to that third book. But yeah, it's good. I'm liking it. They've got the assembled party, I guess you would call it by this point. And yeah, it's turning out to be pretty good. I won't bore you with the details, but suffice to say that it didn't go in the direction I thought it was going. So yeah, that was good.
That's always good with a fantasy narrative.
Yeah. So
because fantasy is one of those genres that, man, if you can. You know, there is hack, and then there is hack.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's been good. And I've been doing some gaming as well here. I got Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection, which for the most part is actually pretty solid.
Yes.
What all games are on it?
Street Fighter 1, 2, World Warrior, Champion Edition, Hyper Fighting, Super Turbo, New Challengers... Alpha 1-2-3 and Street Fighter 3, New Challengers, Second Impact, and Third Strike.
Nice. That's, you know, I've never really got the chance to play Street Fighter 3 all that much.
Yeah. So basically, if you have Street Fighter or Ultra Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 5 on your PS4, you can turn your PS4 into a comprehensive Street Fighter rig.
Yeah,
basically, it's be like a Street Fighter box, and that that pre-order thing is apparently still active, kinda. So. Yeah, even if you get it now, it still applies somehow. I don't know why, how they managed. Yeah. So
jump on that.
Yeah, so you get Ultra Street Fighter 4 as well. So, it's good. They added that training mode that's in there. I think they rushed it because it's a little bit on the buggy side. But it does work. It does work. It does what it's supposed to do. It's just it needs a little refining here and there. So I'm sure they'll patch that in.
The entire concept of rejuvenating health seems to create some strange behavior in older Street Fighter games.
Yeah, it wasn't really made for that. So
yeah,
Yeah, but you know that's the thing that they can't fix with the patch. So at least it does. You know, you can record, even though it's kind of a process to get into record mode and do that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it's all there. The versus mode is in there, and that's a little bit on the strange side, both online and off, because you can start playing one game and then end up in another game.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a thing you can do. It's like when you...
There's the offline random select for games.
Yep. It's like, I have no idea what I'm going to be playing next, which, you know...
We're just going to play some Street Fighter.
Yeah, some stuff will happen. Fireballs will be thrown.
Maybe.
God help you if you land on Street Fighter 1. Yeah. It's good stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing how they manage to refine the online a little bit, because... it's a little bit of a mixed bag, to say the least.
If you have a good connection, it's dreamlike.
Yeah.
If you have a bad connection, then...
Yeah, if you have a bad connection, forget about it. If you have a good connection, it's annoying.
The catchphrase there is, lag gives you time to think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because the whole game slows way the fuck down. So that's real nice.
I think there were a couple of examples of that on my stream on launch night.
Yeah, so... I'm going to be writing up the review for that probably tomorrow. Nice. Along with Sega Genesis Classics, which I have thought...
I have heard things. Yes. Mostly from Jim Sterlin, who said they basically fucked it up bad.
They had one job. One. Just one job. And they managed to screw it up completely. I have no idea how in 2018... that we're still having trouble emulating Sega Genesis.
Did they let AtGames get anywhere near this collection?
No, but they're using the same emulators that they're using for the Sega Forever stuff. Which is, it's all like stuff that's built under Unity, and it's not good.
That makes me want to hurt people.
Yeah. Because it's...
It's the fucking Genesis!
Yes!
For God's sake!
This is largely a port of the PC collection.
Yeah, which actually worked a lot better.
Yes.
So I don't know how they managed to screw that up. But apparently they rebuilt everything for no apparent reason.
Didn't know what they were doing.
The big issue, though, is like when you're playing a game, it will just stutter for no reason whatsoever. It doesn't matter what's going on in the screen. It will just stop. And then...
Because the PlayStation 4 doesn't have quite enough power to emulate a... 16-bit console from 1989.
Unless it's Super Star Wars.
Yeah.
That one, it does fine.
Yeah. So, that's...
that's where we are.
And the online is a disaster. It's like, you know how... it would be nice if you could choose the game that you actually want to play online. Yeah, you can't do that.
What?
Instead, you go to the online mode, and then what happens is you choose the games that you don't want to play. And then when you get matched up with a player, then it picks from the games that you do want to play. And then you and the second player vote on the game, whether you want to play it or not. And if somebody says no, then the matchmaking session ends. And then you have to do it all over again. So that makes a whole lot of sense.
No.
No.
Yeah.
And what's even greater, though, is like when you're playing a game online with somebody after you do get matched up, the performance is abysmal. And you know how it has this rewind feature, which is really awesome, where you can, you know what it is, you just rewind back in time to be able to like unscrew yourself, basically.
Uh-huh.
So that still works in multiplayer. Player one has control of that. Unfortunately, there's no indication to player two that that has actually happened until they teleport back in time. What the heck?
So the whole thing is going to be a salt factory.
It's a 2.5-star game if I were to rate it right now, basically. Sega could have... There are many open source emulators out there that do a far better job than the crap that they're using here, but they won't use them because they don't want to contribute the code back into the emulator. So,
yeah. Do they understand that this is why people just go ahead and get a RetroPie?
Do they understand life?
Apparently not. Because, I mean, if this is what Sega is doing for their, you know, most popular classic system, I see no reason why anybody should want to buy this.
No.
And, you know.
They don't understand that they aren't up against other, quote-unquote, legitimate sellers of, you know, classic software. They need to start putting out collections that actually justify picking that over a RetroPie or just PC emulation in general or whatever the option may be.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're actually competing against, and I don't think they realize that.
Yeah. And the weird part is like I'm seeing other sites doing reviews of this, and there's like they're giving it 7s and 7.5 and like 8s, and I'm like, what game are you playing?
The game with rose-tinted glasses included, apparently?
Yeah. Probably.
So, could it just be a problem with the PS4 version?
Nope,
it
happens on the Xbox One, too.
Yes.
That is the work of a company that has no sense of what it needs to make.
Yeah, well, they outsourced it to, what was it, D3 Publishing. So,
oh my God.
That was a mistake. So that's been my week of disappointment. So how about you?
All right, well, Patrick.
As many of you may know, there's the Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo Tournament of Legends 3 coming up at Canada Cup this fall. And leading up to it, there are a series of major tournaments that are going to be awarding qualifying spots for the bracket of 32 at Canada Cup. And one of those is Monday Night Fightcade over on the Arcadium Twitch channel. And it has been confirmed today that I will be taking part in this.
Ooh.
So, I will be almost immediately after the show signs off practicing on 30th anniversary or Fightcade or whatever people happen to be signed on to that I usually hang out and play with.
Yeah.
So it's time to do work. The field is already very intimidating. I think everyone listed in the tournament is a legitimate threat. So 8 weeks of qualifiers. I'm hoping I can sneak in there and maybe get into the top 8 final round, maybe eke out a victory there. But now that my move is pretty much wrapping up, I actually have the time and the mental stamina to put into practicing and knocking the rust off in the way of playing Super Turbo. So the whole thing starts Monday, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, I'll tune in.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay then. Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay, Teresa?
I have been very poorly playing Dragon Ball FighterZ, but it's cool. I like the animations and everything. Just checked it out to see what it was about.
It is a really well-designed game.
Yeah. Well, it's Arc System Works. I mean...
Well, it's Arc System Works, but the producer is from Namco Bandai.
Yeah.
Her name is Tomoko Hiroki, and she's really trying to revolutionize anime fighters and get them pushed further into the mainstream than they currently are.
Mm-hmm.
And damn if she hasn't done that, because right now it is far and away the number one most registered 4 game at EVO this year.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's taking Street Fighter V's lunch. It is the number one most registered 4 game at the moment, and pretty much has been since they opened registration earlier this year. So I would not be surprised if Dragon Ball FighterZ breaks the 3,000 player barrier when all is said and done.
Mm. It looks just gorgeous.
Yeah.
So Yeah, that's been fun. But otherwise, I've been doing some casual gaming, Plants vs. Zombies stuff. I did start Kimmy Schmidt season 4, and so far so good. It's kind of funny. I just finished up the first episode right before we started recording. And but mostly this week, I was doing a pre-surgery nesting clean, I guess.
And it just kind of hit you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you guys do clean and you don't like to clean, this soft version of Barkeeper's Friend is a fucking bomb. it cleaned things that I had given up on like 3 years ago. So that was really cool, and it's less than $3. How can you go wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up not having surgery today because they called me yesterday and said that even with our insurance, my portion of the bill was going to be almost $1,800 goddamn dollars. And so I noped out of it. I'm like, no, I'm not going tomorrow. And now I have a very angry doctor.
Oh, I bet.
I know. So I'm trying
to... Fuck you, you're paying him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, maybe he already put the down payment on the boat.
Maybe. Well, there's a very real cancer threat, so I'm going to go in sooner for a biopsy since I'm not having the actual surgery. They were going to do the biopsy at that time.
Okay.
So, yay.
Hooray.
Yeah, I want to, like, push that off as long as I can. So, or maybe get some supplemental insurance. Yeah, we used to have an HMO, and we never worried about insurance stuff. You know, nothing was ever more than like $400 or $500. And now what? So, it makes you really, rethink a lot of things in life. So yay, $1,800 goddamn dollars. I know. And my cats are going in for surgery next week, and that's going to be close to $2,000.
Right.
So
just ow.
You know, every summer, something pops up. Mm. But other than that, we've been trying not to drown, man. Whatever tropical storm was going on, it managed to find its way up here. Mm-hmm. And it turned Lake Street into literally a lake. And there was just so much water that sewers were backing up. And
things. Good times.
You know, right? You know, you get 5 inches of water in, like, an hour, tends to do something. So I thought we were bad until I saw some of the pictures from a town. Well, it's actually just 2 towns north of us, which is not far. I can walk there in an hour. But yeah, it's been a crazy week. But now it's beautiful outside. It's not 90 fucking 5 or anything anymore. And we could actually go outside without getting heat stroke. So at least to end it on a positive note.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, it's your turn.
Yeah, so I have survived the heat. I was out for a good bit in that stuff. And yeah, add some humidity to, you know, 85 to 90 degree weather, and it's basically just I want to die weather. While you're just drowning yourself in water.
Yep.
To survive as long as possible. But now it seems like we're going to be in the 70s for the most of the next week, so that's a much better situation. Especially when you see like rain on the forecast, and it never happens.
Mm.
It's like, I just needed something. But yeah. I've been watching a lot of Netflix for the past couple of days. I went all through Arrested Development Season 5, which is just very weird. Which I guess is Arrested Development. Yeah, so they go hard on Ron Howard being a part of the show.
Uh-huh.
As a character, as well as just being himself, because Rebel Alley is a big focus character on there, which she is the illegitimate daughter of Ron Howard, who somehow is still brought into the fold of the family, I guess. And she is a love interest for Michael and George Michael, which obviously brings up a lot of weird stuff. Buster has some pretty good stuff going on there. But yeah, like a lot of what they have here is a response to kind of the Trump stuff, where Lindsay is running for Congress, I guess. I assume the House. And she has maybe run her campaign, and she just gets the worst material, essentially like Trump-like material for her to do, and it just keeps working for her. It eventually fizzles out at a certain point, as they explain, but yeah, maybe might be actually the star of the show now, because she continues doing the thing where she is impersonating other people and finding other work that way. And there's just some really weird shit that goes on, but that's a pretty good season. I also watched Kimmy Schmidt season 4, most of it. Like, I have a couple more episodes to go, but it goes some really weird places that is great. There's like a whole storyline going on where Kimmy gets a Roku and decides to start watching essentially like those like crime investigation documentaries on a service called HouseFlix.
Wow, way to get meta.
Yeah, and so that whole thing ends up with there being a whole documentary, like a whole episode that is just a documentary by this DJ that I guess is getting married to another, Hadid sister? Named Hello. Then he's trying to find a DJ for his wedding and wants to get DJ Slizzard, which is the guy that did The Bunker. He did DJing for a bit in like the 80s, and so this guy considers him like the greatest DJ ever.
He's not.
So it's him trying to find him, what happened to him, and what his real name is on that. Ends up finding out he went to prison for the Bunker stuff. And then tries to essentially find the way that to get him out of prison to prove that he didn't actually do that. And I don't think it ever succeeds, at least hasn't so far, but it's this whole crazy thing. It's just really ridiculous. They dedicate a whole episode to this like fake documentary, and it's really great, especially when they bring in Bobby Moynihan's character, which he's an MRA lawyer, essentially, very much about men's rights, all that. And it's just great stuff. Like, this whole season is kind of very meta about real world issues, about Trump and feminism and all this stuff. And she actually commits her own Me Too moment. As Teresa's probably seen, she's got a new job. And
oh God!
She's an HR person there, and she finds out her job is to be the one to fire the bad people, and she doesn't like to be mean to people, so she tries to be nice. And in this whole process, accidentally comes onto the guy, and is like, "Oh, you don't have to worry. You know, other people do embarrassing things," and then her shorts fall down, and she's like, and she has like a tea drink or something like that. It's like, hey, do you want to suck this dry? And it's just fucking ridiculous shit. And then she's getting got sexual harassment complaints, and her being the HR person, she has to investigate herself, and it's all just fucking silly shit. But yeah, that show is great. It's a shame we're only getting half the season right now, but they've done a good job with what they have so far.
Yep.
Titus obviously steals the show some more as he tries to get actual acting work, and Jacqueline's his agent, and he's incredibly lazy and very picky. So he does not like a lot of the gigs that he gets. There's like one where he gets actual I forget what they're called. It's just like the very basic videos that get just licensed out to people to use. And he thinks they're porno. He's like, when the hell is the porn going to start? Or he's just like a firefighter putting out fires on like mannequins. And it's just really stupid shit. That show's great. And The Flash season 4 got onto Netflix just as I was wanting to watch season 4. And that is also really good. So they continue on from what happened in the previous season where The Flash has to go away for a while. But they get kind of bored, I guess, and bring him back. Or kind of like overwhelmed with the work. So they bring him back, and this whole process ends up creating more metahumans that then they have to deal with. And they end up, the most recent episode I watched, essentially finding Elongated Man, which I was looking up. And he's a weird character. But they also jokingly floated the idea of calling him Plastic Man. Hero. But yeah, that character is interesting because the CG is not good enough to really do it justice. So it just looks kind of like cheesy CG, which is kind of the whole show's forte. But yeah, that's been pretty good so far. And as for games, I played Pokemon Quest. That is the new free-to-play game they put out on Switch and mobile. And I've been playing on the Switch, and it is definitely a mobile game because they give you a cursor to control to pick to actually like use the menus and all that. You don't have like direct control to highlight the different parts of the UI, which makes it not fun to control. The other thing is the description mentions like loot, which is not really loot. It's like these specific types of stones. That just have increasing stats as you get new ones that you just slot into your Pokemon to make them more powerful or get them more health. And I think that's largely it for that. It has some of the same mobile trappings where you can only do so many like sections of the game. Like each of the areas has like 3 or 4 sections to complete, and you don't control the characters directly. They just run around to different battles, and then you can switch between them and use one of their two moves, though some will only have the one. And yeah, it has, you only do like 5 of those at a time unless you complete some of the challenges that get you more battery charges or whatever it is called. And that will let you do more in one session before having to let it just recharge itself. There's cooking. That's how you recruit Pokemon. You don't actually catch them. You cook food, and so far I've been able to get like 1 or 2 Pokemon to show up each time and use just the various bits of food you pick up during each of the levels. And so it's a lot of this little weird shit that is very much what you would expect out of a mobile game. And yeah, it's all right. It's probably the least interesting of the stuff they showed during that old Pokemon conference. But yeah, it's okay. I'll probably do a video this weekend and get it up on the site. I've also been playing more Pixel Junk Monsters 2, which is still really good. I got a video up on our YouTube channel for that. And yeah, that's been a lot of fun. I've beaten all the levels on the fun difficulty. I'm working on getting all the rainbows on that before I move on to tricky. And that has just been a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to their next update, which will basically zoom out the camera so you can sort of see more of the area around you and get a better sense of where enemies are at and where they're coming from. Because as you run around the stage, you can kind of lose track of where enemies are at if they're spawning off-screen. That's like the one major issue, and it's not even really that big. Yeah, that game's been a lot of fun. And I think that's been largely it. I picked up the Season 3 pack for Pinball Arcade when PSN had a 20% coupon code out for people to use on various things. So I've got Black Knight 2000, and that's a great pinball game to have. It has some of the best music of any table.
Mm.
I would definitely recommend looking it up on YouTube if you do not believe me. Because that is, it's just basically like a nice like classic rock song. It was just plays, and that's always good for pinball. So that's been kind of it. How about you, Brandon?
All right, yeah. So first and foremost, I am, of course, gaming-wise, still playing Mass Effect Andromeda. I'm pretty sure I'm getting close to the end now, so I'm trying to get all the side quests and loyalty stuff done before we start on that. So, it's a bit of running around, doing this and doing that, occasional funny moments. Still liking it. I mean, it's still kind of janky graphics-wise, but otherwise, it's pretty much the game they originally wanted now. Let's see. So, other than that, probably what I'm going to do after I finish that is, the plan is I'm going to go, because it comes out later this week, I'm going to go over to GameStop and get a copy of Vampire, from Don't Nod, which is coming out this week.
Yeah.
Give that game a try. That's the plan, basically. And of course, I've also got Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition for Switch still going, if that doesn't work out. So, let's see. Reading manga. I don't know if you guys, I've talked before about Devilman Crybaby, the really, acclaimed anime on Netflix.
Yeah.
That's like a adaptation of like one of those old storied franchises in the anime world, Devilman. Well, now for the first time and God knows how long, because I know for a fact that people have been trying to bring this thing over so many times over to the US, you can finally get officially an English translated version of Go Nagai's original Devilman manga.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's going to be in a two-part hardcover edition. The first one came out, I can't remember if it was early this week or late last week. You can go, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the hardcover edition for the Queen Emeraldus manga, Leiji Matsumoto's thing. It's a hardcover edition. It's a special one, so it's going to be a little on the pricey side. But what you end up getting is you get the first two volumes of the original manga, plus, because they do this sort of as the way the timeline works, you get a sort of side series that was going on at the same time called Shin Devilman. You get all the original pages, including the original color pages as well. And Shin Devilman is basically like because it takes place in the middle of the series, it's sort of like a time travel type thing where Devilman and Ryo Asuka, they go back in time and they witness like Joan of Arc and Hitler and all this stuff. It is fucking awesome, but it's also a really good showing of just how much manga has changed since the early 70s. Because by modern standards, Go Nagai's artwork looks pretty primitive. It's still amazing looking, but you compare it to later manga, the stuff that you'll get out of Shonen Jump, and you see, just how much the medium has advanced since then. You also start to sort of notice that Go Nagai does have like one or two artistic quirks. Like, he always draws his faces kind of in profile. It's not as bad, but you start to notice it if you look for it. Also, on top of Devilman, apparently, I think next month we're actually going to get the first hardcover edition of another Go Nagai classic, which is the original Cutie Honey.
Really?
We're getting the original Cutie Honey manga, which wouldn't be that much since the original manga is like only two volumes. But yeah. So and not only that, but I think next month. Well, actually, not next month, but later this month, we're going to be getting a hardcover edition of Leiji Matsumoto's original Captain Harlock manga. Yep. So, apparently, because of Netflix, we're now getting just sort of a renaissance of old-school manga that we can get. So, awesome, right?
Yes.
So... see, other than that, I finally got a chance to watch Big Trouble in Little China, which I had never seen before. It's those of you who don't know, it's one of those early 80s movies by John Carpenter. And of course, you know, with a John Carpenter flick, you kind of know what you're going to get. You know, he wrote, directs, usually produces, and scores the things all by himself. And it's basically like being on a roller coaster from beginning to end. Like, it literally, the movie just does not let up. Also, I started to realize the sort of the humor here is that the it's not Kurt Russell. It's who plays the lead. It's the guy who plays the president in Independence Day. Here's the thing. So that the movie Big Trouble in Little China is basically supposed to be like a takeoff of like the old adventure serials that used to be like a big thing in theaters back in, you know, the 40s. But it also sort of makes fun of the whole concept of a what they used to call the white savior trope, which is where like a white guy ends up in the middle of a quote unquote foreign culture and sort of is like the big hero. But if you actually watch this movie close, you can see that, no, he's just kind of a hanger-on, and it's the other people who actually accomplish shit. Also found out that, I know that, I've said before, you know, John Carpenter, you know, scores most of his movies, and he scored other movies, too. What I didn't know is that he actually had a band back in the day, called the Coupe de Villes, and they actually are on the soundtrack for this movie. And... literally, the other two guys, because it's a three-piece, it's John Carpenter, and the other two guys in the band are the two guys who played Michael Myers in the original Halloween.
Really?
Yeah. What's his name? Tommy Lee Wallace, or whatever, the guy who originally played Michael Myers is the keyboard player, and like the high notes singer. And then there's the guitar player who was the stuntman on the original Halloween, and also ended up directing, I think it was some other movies as well. He's the guitarist. And John Carpenter, you know, in the video and stuff live, he plays bass, but he played like bass, rhythm guitar, synth, drum programming, stuff like that. It's pretty freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, well, it was a little hot under the collar over here, in more of the ways than one. One, I'm not really going to go into detail that much. You can just look at it on my Facebook page about it. The other being that, you know, it's been 90 degrees out and the sun is a deadly laser. So,
yeah, I'm up in Canada and I'm melting already. So,
yeah, what is it right now in Canada?
It's like 85, and it's like, well, this time of night. So,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, it is. It's just wonderful. It's wonderful!
Yay. Yeah, here it's about 76 on the other side of the Erie.
Alright, well, I guess we got all that out of the way. Has anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, God.
No, good.
Let's just forget this week happened and go on.
Yeah. <Basically. laughs> Alright, well then. With that out of the way, it's now time for everyone's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, today I want to tell you all a little story. A story that actually happened. It's completely real. It's not some bullshit creepypasta or anything. In fact, I actually first heard this story from my father, and then got it sort of corroborated by, well, records. Okay, so do you guys by any chance remember that old TV show, The $6 Million Man?
Yeah.
You know, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We can make him stronger,
like
faster.
Like a red jumpsuit or whatever shit that he wore all the time, yeah.
Yeah. That was back
an action figure of him.
Yeah, that was back in the 70s when action TV shows were cheap as fuck.
Right.
Okay, so back in 1976, they were shooting an episode for The $6 Million Man. It was called Carnival of Spies. And the episode was being filmed at, because it took place at this place called The Pike, which was this... amusement park near the pier in Long Beach and in California. So part of this, the show was part of the episode was going to take place in this place that was called Laugh in the Dark. It was a dark ride, you know, for those of you who don't know what a dark ride is, that's like an industry term for, you know, your haunted house or your ghost house, those type of things. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like one of those super cheap bullshit ones you get at the county fair, the ones that are like hitched up on the back of a truck.
Right.
The ones that have like all the scary artwork on the front, and then you go in and it's like a dude shaking a fence, and that's it. So in the shoot, of course, as you can imagine, it's a dark ride, and there tends to be a lot of shit in a dark ride that's kind of, you know, in place, you know. Of course, part of the thing about a dark ride is that, you know, if you turn on the lights inside of a dark ride, it just immediately destroys any of the sense of terror that you would originally get.
Yeah.
It just looks like something in some dude's garage. So, of course, you go inside this dark ride, of course, and you got all the stuff that you typically find in a dark ride. You got your mannequins, you know, your ghosts hanging from the ceiling, your zombies and your mummies and your werewolves and your whatnot. And, of course, this being the 70s, by this time they had started upping their game as far as the scares were concerned. So you'd see, you know, stuff like dudes hanging from nooses and stuff like that. So they're trying to... film this episode in for the $6 Million Man. And as they're doing it, one of the guys who's in charge of props, he's trying to move some of the stuff around in the dark house because, you know, they needed the space, right? And so he decides he's going to go over to this one wax mannequin that's over there, and it's like hanging from a gallows, right? And he's like, all right, I'm going to try and move this thing. So he's like, all right, thing's kind of hanging from a noose, so I guess I'll need to, like, get this thing by the arm and try and, you know, pull it over here. And so he pulls on the thing's arm, and the thing's arm comes off. And there's human bone and muscle tissue inside of it.
Oh, God.
As you can probably guess, it wasn't a mannequin.
Oh, God. Oof.
What they had stumbled across was the very much withered, mummified corpse of a man named Elmer McCurdy, who was an American bank robber and train robber back in the early 20th century. He was infamously killed in the middle of a shootout with police in 1911 after trying to rob the Katy train in Oklahoma. He was called by the press, he was called the bandit who wouldn't give up. And his mummified body, after he died, of course, they mummified his body, and it was put on display at a funeral home in Oklahoma. Because it's early 20th century, what the fuck else you gonna do? We still got a few more years before movies kick in, so gotta get your kicks where you can get them, right? And then after that, after he was in that funeral home for a couple of years, somebody for like a carnival bought it, and it became an attraction at this traveling carnival. Oh, and eventually, after the owner of that carnival died, it ended up being placed in storage in the middle of a Los Angeles warehouse. So at that point, the guy's son, the guy who was head of the carnival, his son came to sort of, you know, do some clearance in 1964, found the corpse, And he gave it over to this guy named David F. Friedman, who was a filmmaker. You know, he made B movies and stuff. You know, exploitation, that type of stuff. And the corpse actually makes a brief appearance in his film She Freak. Then he sold the body along with other wax figures, because, again, this thing was basically thrown in with a bunch of other mannequins and shit, because nobody realized by that point that it was actually a human body. Then it got sold to the Hollywood Wax Museum, and then finally it made its way to this dark ride in the middle of the pike. Nobody could find it again for over like a decade until this poor pop prop guy accidentally found it in Laugh in the Dark at the Pike in Long Beach, California.
Yeah, I wonder what color his pants were after that.
Yeah. So, no, this is just, it's the weirdest fucking story in, it's just the weirdest fucking story for a corpse in American history. And as a final bit of its permanent sort of imprint on popular culture, Mark Taylor, the guy who was the head designer for the He-Man franchise, he actually encountered the McCurdy corpse when it was still in the as an attraction at the Laugh in the Dark. And he used it to help design Skeletor.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
And that's been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
I feel like, and now we've heard the rest of the story. Oh, my God. That took a twist.
If you ever get a chance, there's stuff on YouTube that tells the story about how this happened. It's a fucking comedy of errors from beginning to end. Funny thing was, at first, a lot of people thought it was Jesse James. Either Jesse James or Butch Cassidy, one of those two. But no, it turned out to be this other guy, Elmer McCurdy. Yeah.
Don't know where to go with that after that.
Yeah.
Now that's out of the way, we need to start the show proper, and as always, we start off the show proper with our asshole of the week. Now, our assholes of the week are the assholes in the Trump administration, who we now figured out vastly underestimated the number of casualties of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that's just...
like, vastly, vastly.
It's devastating news.
Yeah, this is the deadliest natural disaster in this country's history.
Yeah, and like we have to constantly remind people, the people of Puerto Rico are American citizens, even though technically their country is just a protectorate of the United States, not an actual state. They still have most of the rights and liberties of an American citizen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so the estimate they have is 4,645, and they're pretty sure that's still underselling it.
Yeah. Originally, I think originally when they started out, they were saying it was like, and this was like from fucking Trump himself when he made that goddamn speech. It was like, what, 64 people?
Yes, that's what they said.
I think initially it was like 17 after, like right after it ended.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, but there's still a lot of wreckage and all
First
that.
Of all, I just want to point this out. It's really like unprofessional to start counting corpses when like people are still draining the water. Like, we didn't really find out all the casualties after Katrina was over. You know, it took a few months, remember?
Yeah.
But no, they had to fucking come out and trot out how awesome they are by saying only 17 people died. We're number one!
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, well, he was throwing paper towels at people.
Yeah, because he didn't want to touch the dirty Mexicans.
Yeah, so they say they think it's going to be a lot higher because it's sort of a survivor bias, that's what they call it. Because it says here, the study was done by surveying about 3,300 randomly chosen households across the island earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
They compared results of that survey with official mortality statistics from 2016. and that allowed researchers to estimate the number of deaths that likely occurred as a result of Hurricane Maria between the day of the storm and December 31st, so basically through the end of the year.
Yeah, like it said that one man died because there was no power to operate medical machinery. You know, he had a breathing machine.
Yeah, a lot
machine.
Of it is people needing medical attention that could not get it.
Mm-hmm. And one man died in a lantern fire because he didn't have electricity.
Yeah. Right.
And, yeah, that's it's obviously not great, and the fact that the government is actively hiding this
information
is the thing that is really bad.
Yeah, because they're so – God, it's just gross is what it is. It's just a dirty story. You know, I feel dirty reading it.
Yeah.
And realizing that this man is our president.
Yeah.
And that these... No, the whole fucking administration really is this goddamn crooked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, shamelessly, unabashedly crooked.
Yeah. And that stuff really needs to be brought to light.
Yeah.
Especially as, let's say, Trump keeps campaigning for his reelection.
Yeah.
Like, oh, which, you've got 4,600 Americans on your, that much blood on your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they weren't white, so he doesn't give a shit.
No, but those would be good things to bring up.
Americans should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, a lot of their families of those dead people are probably now in Florida.
Yeah.
Having moved out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because they still have issues with electricity and clean water and all that.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, have we talked about the private security companies that are basically running around Puerto Rico right now?
No.
Fucking mercenaries. Because you gotta privatize fucking everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Robert Mueller can't work fast enough.
No. Really, no.
Like, I know he's trying to make his case as fucking airtight as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, but still.
Yeah.
Right. Like, at some point, there comes a point where you're like, dude.
Yeah, I like that people are still trying to downplay the investigation as having no merit when, you know, people compared it to, you know, the Benghazi investigation mm-hmm. and all that. It's like, oh, this thing, you know, 3 years, no indictments, no nothing. You know, the Trump-Russia stuff, it's like 16 months, you know, 14 indictments,
mm-hmm.
you know, 22 charges, like that sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, there's shit here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
scratching the surface.
It's probably not even going to be the direct collusion stuff that's going to take him down.
No, it's probably going to be the money laundering.
Yeah, that or obstruction of justice, that sort of stuff.
One of those two.
And he's actively trying to backtrack and say, oh, I never said anything about Russia being the reason for firing James Comey. And it's like, no, you said this on national television.
Yeah, like we got tape, man.
Like,
I wish fucking somebody would just play the tape back for him and have him watch it.
Right, he'd still say it was fake news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, SNL even fucking parodied this where it was Keenan that was doing it. And he's like, wait, you're just saying this? Do we get him? No? Oh. That sort of shit. It's like, he's fucking outed himself so many times. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, look. Wait, here's look to the bright side. November.
Yeah.
We have to wait a few months, but November.
Yeah.
Well, if the only other game in town, the Democrats, would actually stop running on, hey, we're not Republicans, and start running on, you know, shit that majority of Americans want. Yeah, like healthcare. You know, jobs, maybe?
Yeah.
Not giving
I have a feeling that this money. November we're going to have, like, record attendance for a midterm election.
Yeah, probably.
Like, shit, we didn't see until, you know, what the type of shit we saw when Obama was president, you know?
Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting to watch. My worry is that we are legit gonna see some political violence when the midterms come around.
Worry?
Yeah, I am legit worried.
No, I don't know if worried is the right word.
Or like expecting?
Yeah, probably.
But look, I say worried because I want to think the best of people.
You want to think the best of people, but people can only take so much goddamn shit.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
you know?
Vote on November, people. Just
leave your guns at home.
Yeah, leave the guns at home. No. All right, now, to wipe that taste out of our mouth, we come to our hero of the week, who, by the way, is an immigrant from Africa, who, because of his deed, is now on the fast track to becoming a French citizen. Over in Paris, a gentleman from Mali who was looking to, you know, he had come to France only a couple months before to get work and hopefully become a French citizen, saved a toddler from a balcony after literally scaling the building. Like up, how many stories was it?
He went up to the fourth floor.
Four stories.
Yeah, the child had fallen from the sixth floor, mm-hmm. and it somehow managed to grab onto the balcony.
Yeah.
And he was just like damn Spider-Man there.
They call it, that's why people are calling him the real Spider-Man. The dude is literally like shimmying across the rails like this is fucking Uncharted. And
yeah.
He saved the kid. And now he's now legal. He's gotten legal status as he's on the fast track to becoming a French citizen.
Yeah, so his name is Mamadou Gassama.
Mm-hmm.
22 years old, came from Mali, especially because his brother was there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he initially went to Italy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Then moved over to France. To be with his brother, and just happened to be walking by as he saw this, and just climbed up these balconies incredibly fast. The video they have here is less than a minute. It's 58 mm-hmm. seconds.
That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah, and so yeah, for his heroism, he is going to be getting legal status. I think he's also gotten work offers. I think firefighter units somewhere in the city offered him a job.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's going to be taken care of.
Yep.
That's
as a result
nice.
For doing this.
Because he
yeah,
and
that's,
his brother
that's an interesting
and
way of handling immigration.
Right?
Somebody
instead of
shows
calling
that
him...
they have something of value to offer to society, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, instead of berating him from coming from, quote, shitholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, right. by the way, I'm pretty sure under Donald's definition, Malia would be considered a shithole country.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
His definitions leave a lot to be desired.
Yep.
But let's also give a big boo to the dad who left his 4-year-old at home alone because he needed to run to the store.
And then he needed to go play Pokemon Go.
He needed to go play Pokemon Go. I want to slap him. At least he genuinely seems remorseful about what happened. And apparently he's been an absent dad for a little while. And didn't really understand how to take care of a child.
Yeah, no shit.
You don't leave a 4-year-old home alone.
Nope.
Although there could be a cultural thing. I know other people used to.
It's France, so, you know.
Yeah. But, wow. That's really cool that you know, everybody is, everybody's being so cool with him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's how it should be.
Yeah, I hope Donald Trump hears this story and gets to know that a lot of us are looking at him with side eye.
Yeah, and then the next time he sees, what's his name, Emmanuel Macron, you know, mm-hmm. the current prime minister of France, and, you know, just gives him the stink eye, you know.
Well, Macron doesn't want to see him, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, so it's now time to start the proper show proper. And our first story for the night, you remember that North Korea summit that, you know, it was on and it was off? Well, it's back on now. It's happening on June 12th after he got a nice big envelope from Kim Jong-un.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. They had a diplomat from North Korea visit the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talked to him, dropped off a letter from Kim Jong-un. And, yeah, so they are back on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'll believe it when it happens.
Yeah, that's probably the right approach to take on this one.
Yeah.
It's like that Craigslist buyer says they're coming to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
Never really shows up. Oh, like, reschedule.
Honestly, I 100% believe that. I 100% believe that Donald Trump intended to do all of this to begin with. He just wanted to flex his muscle a little bit so all the chimps in the room will be like, he's strong, you know.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that's not really working anymore.
No, because now, you know, Europe has kind of realized that there's a bit of a vacuum there, and they're taking steps to fill it.
Because mm-hmm.
they've kind of realized that with the orange turd in power, the United States isn't as reliable an ally as it once was.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we don't have it listed in the show notes tonight, but we'll go ahead and just mention it quickly. How you liking them trade tariffs? Trade tariffs that's had Canada, Japan, Mexico, and pretty much everyone else say, yo, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, hey, you want to lose some jobs? All right.
Yeah.
Put more strain on the steel industry.
Right ahead.
Want to have another time when you're going to have to start paying $4 a gallon for gas again?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's finally going down in here. It shot up right around the time the Iran deal was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's finally going back down.
Yeah. It's still like 250 something down here, so.
Ooh, yeah, it was,
send me a couple gallons.
It was in like 260s, then it's down 250s now.
Mm-hmm. All right, well. Yeah, so, they're going to Singapore on June 12th. We'll see how this goes. Honestly, at this point, I think both North and South Korea are just trying to kind of humor the U.S. at this point. Because, unfortunately, the U.S., a lot of people don't really know this, but it was actually the U.S. that signed for South Korea for the ceasefire. Because apparently South Korea wasn't really in much shape at that moment to sign it. So actually the U.S. is the one that kind of has to officially end it.
Mm.
And considering who's currently in power right now,
yeah,
it's kind of a wild card. Yeah. All right, well, all right, next story is about former governor of Missouri, Eric Greitens, he officially resigned today after numerous sex and campaign finance scandals.
Yeah, this has been going on for quite a while as the investigation pulled up all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's finally come to a head, and he's resigned at 5 p.m. today.
Yep.
Yeah, first-term governor. I assume he went in 2016.
Mm.
So that's a pretty quick exit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Within 2 years.
Mm. Today, Illinois couldn't do that a few more times.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he, let's see, state lawmakers have moved forward with impeachment proceedings, and he was charged with a felony invasion of privacy charge in February for taking a nude photograph of a woman without her consent. But earlier this month, the trial was abruptly halted when the state withdrew the charge.
Yeah.
I think that was because somebody that was involved in the prosecution was pulled in as a witness.
Yeah.
So they had to obviously stop the trial, and they had to have new people in charge of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's also indicted in April with a felony for misusing his charity's donor list to raise money for his 2016 political campaign. Yeah, so he obtained the donor list without permission from the Mission Continues, a St. Louis-based charity that he founded for use in his campaign. He directed an employee of the charity to take a list of donors, despite the fact that personal use of the list was prohibited by the charity.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's see. They're going to be releasing details on that stuff next week. See, he publicly disclosed in January that he had an affair with his hairstylist in 2015 mm-hmm. before his campaign for governor ahead of a local news report detailing the allegations. He and his wife called it a, quote, deeply personal mistake at the time. He denied any criminal wrongdoing, still face intense scrutiny from the Republican legislature leaders who have pushed for his resignation and begun impeachment proceedings against him, which... That's a hell of a thing to get people from your own party going against you, especially Republicans.
Mm.
All right.
Oh, man, it's just American politics, dude.
And he denies all of it.
Of course mm-hmm. he does.
It's clear that for the forces that opposed us, there's no end in sight. I will let the fairness of the process be judged by history.
Yeah, history's already judged you and they think you're a douche.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
So go find some lobby firm and go away. Yeah, well. Anyway, all right, so next up. Oh, God.
Yeah, let's ramp it up a notch here.
Sweet Jesus, God. I swear to God, this guy is like every libertarian stereotype come to life in just like the worst way possible.
Well, this one's a woman.
Oh, yeah, I think you're skipping
House Rep. Diane Black, Republican.
Yeah, that's the Lex one. I forgot. Yeah, Diane Black, who's – sorry, folks. We may need to change that around. I got it. I went too quick on the draw there. No, the next story we're actually talking about is about Diane Black. She's a candidate for governor in Tennessee, and she's also currently in the House of Representatives.
Yep.
Pretty much every Republican right now who's trying desperately to blame everything else about school shootings except the one or two most obvious that's staring everybody dead in the face.
Yep.
She blamed porn.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Porn, it's everywhere in our society. You can go in a grocery store and reach up at the top of the magazine rack and there's porn.
Yeah, she's got some great quotes here. How many of you, when you were in school, ever had an experience where a kid came to school with a gun? Never happened.
Yeah, first of all, that's bullshit.
Yeah, it happened.
I live in the South. Yeah. It is completely not unheard of for kids to accidentally leave their dad's hunting rifle in the back of their truck when they come to school.
Accidentally?
So,
they put it on the goddamn rack in their back window.
No, I mean literally leaving it like in the utility box in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. It was in the back window of the pickup, in the rack, on display.
Yeah.
And you're parking next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is just anecdotal evidence.
And also, this is fucking Tennessee, right?
Right.
I'm pretty goddamn sure that it's happened in her state, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's just saying, I've never seen it, so obviously it doesn't happen.
Exactly. Anecdotal evidence is the best.
Yeah, and so she continues on, why do we see kids being violent? What's out there? What makes them do that? Because as a nurse,
hormones
causes. I think it's deterioration of the family, idle hands of the devil's workshop.
Strike two.
Pornography. It's available on the shelf when you walk in the grocery store, which I've never seen that grocery store. I might want to.
She's talking about Playboy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like that, which on the one hand is kind of quaint because her idea of pornography is
so antiquated, right?
And like. About
that makes me want to know how old she is.
It's almost like Newsweek, but with tits at this point.
Did you look at her picture? She looks like every stereotypical grandmother that used to go to your grandmother's church that would tell you to cross your legs, honey. You don't want people to think you're a whore.
Remember to put the aspirin between your knees, sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she is 67, so that makes sense that her idea of what's in a grocery store comes from 40, 50 years ago.
Well, yeah. I would like to ask her this. What is easier for a 15-year-old to get a hold of in America, a gun or a porn magazine at a grocery store?
Now it's just porn on the internet.
Yeah, if you've got a smartphone, you can pretty much watch donkey sex any goddamn time you want to. So
it's also really fucking easy to get a hold of a gun, too.
Yeah,
yeah, it is.
You know where else has porn and they don't have school shootings? Canada.
Everywhere.
Japan. Italy. England.
All over Europe. And Australia.
You guys are right. Australia.
In fact, I'm pretty sure they've got even more. I mean, you can go to fucking Holland, and I think, you know, they've got fucking legalized prostitution in Amsterdam. You know, the fucking red light district, you know, and...
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The stuff we have here in the U.S., most every other country, major country, has it.
And has had it for longer than we have.
Yeah, has no problem with gun violence.
No.
Or nothing to the extent that we do.
No.
But yeah, she also continues, you have to reach up to get it, but there's pornography there. So do they put Playboys on, like, top shelf sort of thing?
Yeah, it's got to be like way back at the very top of...
I guess I must usually be thinking of like...
And usually, like, I know, for example, like when I go to the bookstore over at the magazine, they'll have like the Playboys and the Plant House, but usually it's in the quote-unquote men's interest section, and it's like way up top, and it's usually blocked off by like the other magazines, so you can only see the label at the top.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking of like the gas station kind of... style of store where it's
you can go to 7-Eleven and get a porno DVD
the
for like you can go to 7-Eleven and get a fucking porno DVD for like $5.
Yeah, let's see, all of this is available without parental guidance, and I think that is a big part of the root cause that we see so many young people that have mental illness get caught in these places. Her website also says, in response to mass shootings, liberals have called for banning confiscating all guns, which is not true. We must recognize mental health issues are the cause of mass gun violence, not the guns themselves.
Well, then why don't you start, you know, putting some money into mental care for American citizens?
No, because she just wants to keep getting money from the gun manufacturers, the NRA, the ammo people, everybody else who's funding pretty much the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because they want to go back to the classic issues of it's either the porn or the video games or the rock and roll. And the rock and roll isn't much of an issue anymore, so we're just going back to the porn.
I don't know. If you listen to Desposito enough times, it will probably make you want to shoot somebody.
Yeah, but that's not so much because the devil is in it, but because it's such a shitty, god-awful song that you want to... It would drive even the most pacifist of monks into a killing spree.
I don't know, man. The one with a rubber chicken is a really great cover of this. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So moving on from that, now we're going to the story that I kind of pulled the trigger on a little too early.
Oh, the vein was coming right out of your forehead on this one. And, you know, deservedly so.
Yeah. There's this guy who's running as an independent candidate for the House of Representatives in the state of Virginia.
Yay, Virginia.
His name is Nathan Larson. He is like, okay, think of like your sort of stereotypical vision of the alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
Like an average member of the alt-right. Okay. Okay, are you imagining him? Like, do you have like an image in your head?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're kind of thinking about, like, okay, what would this dude be like? Okay, he'd be into the concept of white supremacy being, like, a positive or a benevolent thing. Probably has some serious issues with women. Probably deeply misogynistic. Probably identifies as an incel, you know?
Yeah.
Or is sympathetic with incels. Probably thinks that children can consent to sex and therefore it should be legal.
Doesn't think that they should have to consent.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. He also thinks that the definition of rape is a little too, I guess, not rapey enough. And so he thinks a lot of rape should be completely legal. Says that maybe women should be considered property.
Oh, yeah, his quote. Yeah. We need to switch to a system that classifies women as property, initially of their fathers, and later of their husbands. How about, do you want to come say that to my face, motherfucker?
This is an amazingly written story, because on a what the fuck meter, it starts off really high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As you get further in, it keeps going up.
Yeah. So
it does not let down at any point.
Yeah. Let's also say that this guy, on top of all this shit, is really big on freedom of speech and political correctness has run amok.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he
now
is...
imagine all of that, and then click on the link you'll see, and there he is.
Yeah, so...
all of your worst fears of the alt-right given human shape.
And he's open about the stuff.
Yeah, so here's the
thing. It's not like that the one guy that was in Massachusetts that people found out, oh, he was running a red pill site.
Yeah.
It's like, this guy's just like, oh yeah, I believe in all this. I ran, you know, a number of like incel sites and rape sites.
Oh, it gets worse. Okay, so dude's 37. He's an accountant from Charlottesville, Virginia.
Oh, hey,
he looks like an accountant too.
And of course it would be fucking Charlottesville. He's also a pedophile. He admitted to HuffPost on Thursday, and he's bragged in website posts about raping his late ex-wife
repeatedly, and then tried to justify it.
Oh yeah,
by saying that plenty of women have rape fantasies. No, plenty of women have fantasies about drowning you in a goddamn bathtub.
Yeah,
I mean, they have fantasies in the way that, like, you have fantasies about, you know, being handcuffed or like that. Like, you take it slow. You don't go to 10.
Right.
You want the playful part of it, of something that's a little bit dangerous, but not, oh yeah, just do the thing. Do the violent thing.
His definition of rape is women are objects to be taken care of by men like any other property, and for powerful men to insert themselves into as it pleases them, and as long as they believe will be in the women's own interests. In most cases, their interests are aligned as long as the man is strong. Fuck you. Female sex slaves actually get a much better deal than animals, because in most cases they are allowed to reproduce, unlike animals raised for meat or companionship.
Yeah, did you notice that last part there that he mentioned? See how he compared women to livestock?
Cattle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know
what?
This
dude is a fucking serial killer waiting to happen. Like,
well, his ex-wife killed herself.
Yeah.
And he wanted to have sex with their daughter, who is only 3 and thankfully lives with other relatives, and he had to relinquish his parental rights.
Yeah.
I think in the divorce, she fought for him to lose parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe probably had her... rights given to her own family.
Yeah.
Before she committed suicide, which then also comes into play with some of the sites he ran.
Oh yeah, we need to talk about this guy a little bit more. Okay, so I'm reading from the story on HuffPo. According to Morrison's campaign manifesto, his platform as a quote unquote quasi neo reactionary libertarian. See, what did I tell you?
Which, again, really wants me to take a frying pan to his head.
His platform as candidate includes protecting gun ownership rights, establishing free trade, and protecting, quote, benevolent white supremacy, unquote, as well as legalizing incestuous marriage and child pornography. In the manifesto, Larson called Nazi leader Adolf Hitler a, quote, white supremacist hero. He urged Congress to repeal the Violence Against Women Act, adding, we need to switch to Teresa just said, we need to switch to a system that classifies women as property, initially of their fathers and later of their husbands. He also showed sympathy for men who identified as involuntary celibates or incels, suggesting it is unfair that they, quote, are forced to pay taxes for schools, welfare, and other support for other men's children.
Can we just smack him because they clearly don't understand what society entails? They are so fucking focused on probably what they feel, that this is incels in general, is their abuses at the hands of the more popular chads in high school.
You know what the incels actually remind me of?
Mm-hmm.
They remind me of the anorexia community. Yes, there's actually a community of anorexic women and girls who support each other in their illness.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's literally the same really self-destructive individuals all collected together under this one really just, again, self-destructive impulse.
Yeah. They're not just self-destructive.
Well, it's mostly self-destructive, but occasionally they do take other people with them, as like what happened with that dude in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So and what probably happened to his ex-wife, she may have never died of suicide had she never been through whatever hell she went through with him.
Yeah, so using the synonyms Lou Costas T, I have no idea how to pronounce it, and Lysander, I fucking know who he got the Lysander thing from. It's from Lysander Spooner, who would have really not liked this person, as I've read enough of his work to know that he would have abhorred this human being. Larson frequently participated in conversations on his own message boards, he confirmed to HuffPost. Yeah, he used to run, he ran the itself. Yeah, he ran
Suiphead for suicidal pedophiles.
Mm-hmm. He also ran Incel Apocalypse.
Dot today.
Yep.
Which all have been shut down by.
Oh yeah.
The website Babe.
Mm-hmm.
Reported to their domain host.
Yeah, and they got one of the posts that he put up on Suiphead.org. Here it goes. He says, I just want to bang my daughter. Remember, his daughter at the time was like 3 years old.
No, she's three now.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right. This was back in 2017, so she was like two. Yeah. I just want to bang my daughter, actually, but even if it were legal, I'm not sure it would happen since I don't have custody. After sex with kids is legalized, parents or guardians or other guardians will still be gatekeepers to some extent, and a lot of them will want to bang their own kids and not share with others.
No,
I think
they
that
fucking won't.
I think that to get with girls, whether they're young or old, you usually need to have charm and or money. That's especially true if you're trying to get with the more attractive girls. Once sex with kids is legalized, I imagine the competition to get in their pants will be fierce.
I don't understand how he didn't meet an untimely end in a place that we'll talk about he went to later.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get to that in a little bit.
So find out about this, I mean, don't you guys think that his days are numbered?
Oh, he's fucking dead.
Doesn't that make
you
feel good?
Yeah, he is
fucking dead. Like, this is one of those examples when you find a person so vile that it actually makes you feel better about yourself.
No.
I like this in Cellocalypse sites, or at least what they show, like the logo.
Slogan for Incelocalypse is "The day we make the jailbaits our rape slaves."
And the font here is like classic, like 2002 edgelord internet font.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old gothic font with like the daggery.
There's like just extra shit on every letter to make it a little bit harder to understand.
Yeah,
what letters those are.
It's like what black metal bands use for their logos, so it makes it as hard as possible to read.
Yeah.
That type of thing. Real
they just go overboard
shit.
With that shit just to go all in on that.
Yeah. All right, so here's some more, couple of more posts he made. Why doesn't every pedo just focus on making money so they can get a pedo wife and then either impregnate her with some fuck toys or adopt some fuck toys, he wrote on the platform in October. That would accommodate both those who are and aren't into incest. And of course, the adoption process lets you pick a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, he used the term Lou Costa, I'm just going to call him Lou, because I can't fucking pronounce that, on Incelpocalypse Today. There he identified as a hebephilic rapist. No, yeah, that's...
I learned lots of new words in this article.
Yeah, a hebephile is the person who is sexually attracted to infants.
Yeah, so after his wife committed suicide, he got remarried.
Yes.
So that's great.
Yeah.
What's wrong with women?
Let's see. There's another long post by him that was from Incelpocalypse. I'm not going
to
read it.
I like that this article has to explain what jailbait is.
Yeah.
Like, they expect normal people to be reading this. Not just
people. Says here, HuffPost, and because we're at that point now, HuffPost actually has to sort of make the disclaimer here in the article. HuffPost did not view any post explicitly stating that he has engaged in sexual activity with minors, although he repeatedly expressed a desire to have sex with infants and children, including his own daughter. In the phone call, Larson said the word pedophile is vague and just a label, adding that it's normal for men to be attracted to underage women. He said he did not commit any crimes.
Women are not 2 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even like you're talking about 16-year-olds, that's still a little skeezy, but okay, maybe there's a minuscule chance we can have a discussion there, but you're talking about toddlers, dude.
And the next paragraph mentions a 3,300 word essay titled, "Here's How to Psych Yourself Up to Feel Entitled to Rape."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, quote, "Don't forget, feminism is the problem and rape is the solution." God, mm-hmm. He really is just the human embodiment of just all the worst fucking parts of that part of the internet, isn't he? Like,
don't forget the very last sentence here.
Yeah, it's literally like almost a fucking checklist.
Yeah. He's advocated father-daughter marriage, killing women, and raping virgins.
Yeah. He's less worried about his run for Congress and about his sights coming down, which, by the way, most of them have. He told HuffPost that the termination of his websites is an affront to his freedom of speech and that he's going to try to get them hosted elsewhere. Uh-huh. Again with this shit, why do these assholes never understand that freedom of speech doesn't mean that some private entity has to host your shit?
Yep.
And nobody has to listen to your shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Why do that? Can they not get that through their goddamn heads?
Yeah, your internet domain provider is not the government.
No.
They don't have to take whatever you want to spoon fade onto their servers just because you think they are the government.
Yeah. All right. So Larson's political ambitions span more than a decade. He first ran for Congress in Virginia's 1st District in 2008 on what he described as a, quote, anarcho-capitalist platform. Check. That same year, he sent a letter to the Secret Service threatening to kill the president, which landed him in federal prison for 14 months and barred him from seeking public office. Check.
Then you wonder, how is he running for office?
Oh, well, we're fixing to tell you.
Yeah, so in 2016, Governor Terry McAuliffe, who was a Democrat, he actually restored voting and other civil rights to thousands of felons, which, for the record, that's not actually a bad thing.
It's generally a good thing because it's a lot of nonviolent people.
Yeah, drug and nonviolent offenses. But unfortunately, Larson ended up getting in the middle, is also in that number. So that's kind of the risk that you have to accept when you do that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's more good being done than
I do think that, you know, risk to reward sort of, you know, balance is more towards the reward in this case. But unfortunately, assholes like Larson will get in the mix.
Yeah, how well he did the last time he ran.
Yeah, so 2017, he ran in Virginia's House of Delegates, District 21, and secured less than 2% of the vote. Now he's gunning for a seat in Virginia's 10th Congressional District.
I assume it will not go any better for him.
Yeah, and that is if he doesn't get out of this election with his life.
Well, I don't know how he is able to be employed as an accountant, considering his background, just his criminal background, from threatening the president. He probably only makes his money from these horrible websites.
Well, no, he works as an accountant, but he's like
Does he still work as an accountant?
Yeah, he works as an accountant, but he's like one of those, I'm guessing.
Does he take on clients?
Well, I'm guessing he works like as a private accountant, and that he just sort of, I'm guessing he works under like a pseudonym or something. He has to, because otherwise I don't think anyone, unless he's like running, he's laundering money for the mob or something. But until it was pulled down, Larson's site, Nathania.org, a wiki page which details about his latest candidacy, featured posts such as, with titles such as, "A man should be allowed to choke his wife to death as punishment for cutting her hair short without permission," or other acts of gross insubordination. This dude is like a criminal sociopath.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Advantages of father-daughter incest and the justifiability of an incel's kidnapping a girl and keeping her as his rape slave for sex and baby making. A 3,000-word essay titled "Let's Define What Rape Is," which was also posted on the site. as well as other incel sites, he writes, women are objects to be taken care of by men like any other property, and for powerful men to insert themselves into it as it pleases them, and as they believe it will be. Yeah, but Teresa already said that. It's the one where he compares women to livestock. Oh, by the way, here we go. The last two sentences, and it's just going to fucking, all of it's going to come full circle. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
When asked what his constituents would think about his pedophiliac writings, he said, people are open-minded, he continued. A lot of people who disagree with someone like Donald Trump might vote for them anyway just because the establishment doesn't like them.
There is a huge difference between what Trump was peddling and what this guy's peddling.
Oh, you know, you want to say that, but you also remember that Donald Trump is also a serial rapist.
Yeah, but also he wasn't actively writing tons of stuff about wanting to rape his own daughter.
Well, that's also
you
because...
You don't get a gold star for not wanting to rape your two-year-old daughter. There's no gold star for that.
Also, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump can't really write.
Yeah, so. And he did say that... Yeah, you guys are right. I did say some crap about Ivanka.
Yeah.
Did you see the thing? Supposedly his aides add the typos to his tweets.
Yeah, no, so they can make him seem more human.
He types like a 70-year-old man on Twitter.
Oh, by the way, it gets... So you mentioned that last Trump bit. That is directly linked to this, and you know why. Because he's basically the one that's given carte blanche to all these scumbags to come out and not feel shame about it.
Yeah, well, they come out, they can not feel shame about it. Unfortunately for them, people are shaming them.
Yeah. Oh, he's getting shamed. I'd be watching out for a sniper rifle in your future, dude.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure he's going to get a lot more than shamed.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? I don't even think I would look the other way with this one. I'm pretty sure I might stand up and applaud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like, did you guys ever see that that one episode of American Dad where Stan is basically trying to get his first kill? And so the candidate they finally find is that dude who was a pedophile who ran like a preschool somewhere, and then he got off because his mom was loaded and they got a really good lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that guy.
Yeah, for a second I was thinking of the raccoon thing.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. God damn. But in other news, where
somebody that fantasizes about rape to actually doing it.
Yeah. And actually, you know, is now paying for it. Harvey Weinstein has been inducted by a grand jury in his rape case. So.
Indicted.
Indicted. Yeah. He's gonna go to jail for a long time, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so and this... I hope they don't throw him in fucking club fed. They put him in the middle of pound me in the ass prison.
Yeah, so this...
You know what they say about pound me in the ass prison. The warden is a real dick. So...
Yeah, so this isn't really related to too much of the Me Too stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It is involving... let's see... Some of the stuff involving... I don't want to say lesser known people, but... a woman that he... let's see, he's been indicted on rape and criminal sex act charges involving two women.
Yeah.
Let's see, where's it at? They describe what, he was charged Friday with raping one woman and committing a criminal sex act by, compelling oral sex from another. They've been hearing evidence for the last few weeks. And, yeah, so he's been freed on $1 million bail with electronic monitoring. He'll be back in court on July 30th, though they may move that up in light of the indictment. So there's just two women involved in this case, but dozens more have obviously stepped out and talked about their various dealings with Harvey over the past 20, 30 years, which he has denied all of it, and he seems to be confident that he's going to be able to clear his name in this case. I don't know how that's going to go for him.
Yeah.
And so I guess part of this, police set up a sting in which the woman recorded herself confronting Weinstein and him apologizing for his conduct. Or that was, no, this was a different one. happened a couple years ago involving, let's see, what was the woman's name? Vance?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, involving Lucia Evans. She went public with her account of Weinstein forcing her to perform oral sex at his office in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But the prosecutor declined to do this case in 2015 because she did not think there was enough evidence to bring charges to him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now they've got some stuff that actually sticks, and so we'll see how this turns out.
Yeah. Well, all right, so moving on to another scumbag. How many of you guys remember Dinesh D'Souza as much as you wish you could not?
Ugh,
he's that grinning douchebag who makes a bunch of movies and a bunch of propaganda books, usually with the title, America, adjective and verb.
Yeah.
Like, that's America, imagine the world without her, America, how far she's fallen, shit like that.
Mm-hmm. He's a conspiracy theorist douchebag.
Yeah, and he also made a bunch, he makes these shitty propaganda movies, usually when there's an election around the corner. He made that shitty Hillary's America movie. That basically tried to use the old canard of the Democrats being the party of the Klan.
Yeah.
Well, you may remember a while back he was put in prison for campaign finance fraud. He used a pseudonym to donate money to a candidate, which, of course, he was tried, convicted of, and then went to prison for, what was it, like a few months, I think, like 18 months or something like that.
And then he came on probation since then.
And he won't stop fucking whining about it. Hmm. Well, guess who just got a presidential pardon?
Mm-hmm. And worse off for me, yeah, this guy is a piece of work. But worse off for me is that Trump is hinting that he's going to pardon Martha Stewart. Yeah, I don't care about that. But he's talking about maybe pardoning Rod goddamn Blagojevich.
Also known as Ron Blagojevich, which I can never say properly again. Thank you, John Stewart.
Rod Blagojevich was just another one in a line of shitty fucking Illinois governors, just rife with corruption.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of Illinois' budget problems stem from this kind of corruption and mismanagement is more so, you know, Ryan, but, you know, mm-hmm. Blagojevich had his share, too.
Yeah.
He was the one.
The people that that Trump has pardoned, it's a real rogues gallery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just
it's like Joe Arpaio, and it's like, okay, now you're just going to go for every other asshole out there that has a...
And people have been theorizing that the reason he's doing this is because he's testing the waters once Mueller's decision comes down. So that he can start pardoning all of his collaborators?
Possibly. I think it's far less...
Like, I would like... But then again, like, part of me is also that, you know... Then again, it's also possible that he did it because, I don't know, Steve Miller or somebody suggested it to him. You know, while he was...
He's only doing it for basically publicity, for people to talk about him, for him to be center stage again.
Yeah, but... If there's one thing about Donald Trump that we've learned about the Trump administration is that Trump isn't really the captain of the ship.
No,
he's
true.
Basically the steering wheel, and all the other sailors are fighting over which way they're going to turn him.
Did you see who brought this idea up to Trump?
Mm-hmm.
It was Mr.
Yes.
Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Man who managed to get out of taking any heat for the Santa Fe shooting.
Yeah.
Because the royal wedding happened the next day.
Yeah, because he's a subhuman creature.
He's Teflon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how things haven't stuck to him.
Because he's that much of a sewer mutant that, you know, he's no skin, he's all scales. So shit just slides right off of him.
Yeah, I hope
if ever there was a real-life candidate for an actual lizard person... Hey, David Icke, there's your reptilian right there, dude.
Yeah.
So, Oh, man, he is not going to stop fucking talk about this either.
No.
I have a feeling when 2020 rolls around, his next shitty propaganda movie is going to be like a fucking... It's going to be fucking Triumph of the Will, but for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up. Hey, you know that Roseanne reboot? Yeah, it's dead.
Because Roseanne basically tweeted, what was it? Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby equals BJ.
Which was Valerie, what's her name?
Jarrett.
Valerie Jarrett, I think her name is.
I could tell this was some far-right target.
Yeah, you could tell it's weird shit when she started bringing in George Soros.
Yeah, because it's like, I've never heard of Valerie Jarrett until this happened. It's like, okay, this must be what the far right had been obsessing about.
Yeah. Once George Soros gets thrown in there, you pretty much know what you're in for.
Yeah, she was claiming that Chelsea Clinton was married to the nephew of George Soros, and that George Soros essentially outed his fellow Jews during the Nazi occupation.
George Soros was fucking 13 years old.
Yeah, and that he outed his fellow Jews to steal their money.
Again, 13.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She was tweeting about this shit. And ABC caught wind of it and promptly canceled the next season.
Yeah, there was like, nope, fuck this, we ain't getting...
Yeah,
like, I'm pretty sure, I'm going to be perfectly honest here, I think ABC was already sort of walking a tightrope with this, because on the one hand, they knew that this was getting pretty good viewership, but on the other hand...
Scripted comedy, I think, on TV.
Yeah, but I think they also realized that, you know, with a really volatile, that's very understating it.
Yeah.
Volatile personality like Roseanne Barr.
Yeah,
because they probably didn't look too much into her Twitter past.
Yeah,
she tweets about all of the conspiracies, all the right.
Oh yeah, it's not a new thing. She's been she was tweeting this shit when she was running for the Green Party. You know, it ain't new with her.
Yeah, and,
but once she started bringing the Jews into it, that's when people realized, okay,
we might have
a crazy person on our hands here.
Yeah, which I had just seen a story go up shortly before the show that ABC is looking for a way to
reboot it. Yeah,
reboot it with Darlene as the lead.
Yeah,
instead of Roseanne.
Roseanne.
Which
thing is, though, Roseanne technically has billing as the creator.
Yeah.
So there's, like, going to be some weird legal wrangling they're going to have to do.
Yeah.
And as for Roseanne herself, she basically blamed this on Ambien. Now,
which Ambien put out a great statement about it.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Here's the unfortunate, but here's the sad part of it is there is kind of a grain of truth in that shit. Have you ever seen what the side effects to Ambien are?
Holy shit, I have read some of them. Some of them are great. Like, some people will go and rearrange their furniture. One man got up and disclosed to his wife all the times that he's had affairs on her, with whom and where and how often.
Yeah.
People do weird shit on Ambien.
It causes mental instability, emotional instability. It can basically wreck the blocking mechanism in your brain that keeps you from spouting out weird shit.
It emphasizes what you might already have.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Basically, it takes whatever is rocking around in your head
and lets it
verbalize
out.
Them.
It's not going to make you a racist by taking it.
No, that just means she was a racist piece of shit already.
Well, which everybody already knew.
Yeah.
You know, she may have been, even in her Ambien-addled state, she just saw an election go to somebody who was basically running on the platform of racism.
Yeah.
Maybe she was trying to get some ratings of her own, and she just didn't know which version of racism would win elections.
She is an open Trump supporter.
Yeah,
so.
I saw a good joke that she was too racist to have a show on ABC, but not racist enough to be president. She didn't find the line between those two things.
Yeah.
Shit, that's good. That's horrible.
See what CBS is doing for that. What they were doing now?
Yeah, we already said it's the they're trying to redo the show.
That's ABC. No,
that's ABC. CBS is bringing back Murphy Brown.
Really? Yeah,
okay, that's actually pretty awesome because Murphy Brown was
supposed
pretty...
to be like playing off of like what Fox News and Morning Mike show.
Yeah,
I think like a rivalry between those two things.
Yeah, Murphy Brown. If any show would be relevant to the modern world, it's Murphy Brown.
For real.
Oh, I want to say there's a good Murphy Brown joke in Arrested Development.
Oh, I'm sure there is, but save it.
Yeah.
Okay. So in retaliation for this, because of course he fucking did, Trump has ordered TBS, like he fucking owns it, to shut down Samantha Bee's Full Frontal after she called Ivanka Trump a feckless cunt. Okay, so before we go further...
What?
Wait. Before we go any further, Ivanka Trump is a feckless cunt. There, I said it. Arrest me, son of a bitch.
She's an Ant Coulter, to use a Michelle Wolf thing.
Yeah, Ant Coulter. I love that. But Samantha Bee, basically, so she was talking about, there was that photograph that came out of Ivanka Trump holding her, it was like one of her children, which is all nice and good, except it came out right around the time when the story of the hundreds of immigrant children having disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so she said, if you really want to show, you know, that you care about children, why don't you start paying attention to your father's immigration policies, you feckless cunt.
Yeah, and the whole great thing about this is that the people on the right are fine with people using the word cunt when it's used at people on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But not when it's said towards them, because she is a government official. She is fully up for
Ivanka Trump, yes.
Yeah. It's not like a Chelsea Clinton situation where she's a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way,
off limits. Like Barron Trump, okay, don't criticize. Yeah,
Barron Trump's just a kid, and you know, and for the record, the left has been very good in saying, no, don't bring Barron Trump into this. He's a kid, he might have autism, just it's not cool.
Yeah.
But shit on his dad all you fucking want because he fucking deserves it.
Yeah, and the whole great thing with the Roseanne stuff, I saw a lot of people on the right that were obsessing about Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm.
As like, oh, Bill Maher talked about Trump as an orangutan or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we should get him fired from HBO. And I saw a lot of people on the left are like, no, don't, stop.
Please. No.
Pulling a Willy Wonka is like, no. Mm-hmm. No, that would be too bad.
That would be tragic.
Yeah. Did you see Sally Field's response to this whole thing?
Oh, God, please say it.
No.
She said, I like Samantha Bee a lot, but she is flat out wrong to call Ivanka cunt. Cunts are powerful, beautiful, nurturing, and honest.
Feckless on the. I think another person said she insulted her. She, you know, said saying something like, "How dare she call her feckless?" Without denying the fact that she is a cunt.
It's an attempt at censorship.
Yeah, and apparently, I've heard, and I read this on CNN, so take it with a grain of salt. Apparently, some sponsors have decided to leave the show. I don't fucking know, but I'm just hoping she sticks to her guns. Well, no, she didn't, because she had to set out a statement and basically apologize.
Yeah, and they got some other nice tweets here. Somebody said, yeah, so if you work for a president who brags about habitually violating women in an administration that habitually violates women's rights, spares the selective outrage about a comedian using a word that violates your safe space. See another one. Oh no, what did she do? Admit to grabbing women's vaginas, say she'd date her own daughter, let 4,600 people die in Puerto Rico. See another one. For what it's worth, the word Samantha Bee used and other such words was emblazoned on many a t-shirt worn and sold at Trump rallies throughout the 2016 campaign.
Yes, that's right.
It's almost like they're hypocrites.
Roaring, almost. Shrieking hypocrites.
Almost.
Yep. All right, well. All right, now we're getting to the science part of the show. So, centuries ago, Mount Vesuvius erupted and basically covered Pompeii in lava, ash, and soot. And, of course, people now know that, you know, many years later, once they started, you know, excavating Pompeii, one of the archaeologists came up with the idea of, you know, using plaster to sort of mold onto the remains, and that's why you find all those petrified statues in Pompeii.
Yeah.
Well, they've actually found another one. Skeleton of a man fleeing eruption in Pompeii.
Yeah, this guy, as far as they could sort of infer, it seemed like he had managed to escape some of the initial fallout. But then had gotten crushed by a giant rock from a nearby building. So as you can see, he's lying on his back, and there's this giant stone crushing his torso and head.
Yeah. That guy had a really bad day.
That was the entire town. If you're lucky, you were done within seconds.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And you had people like this that... I think they suspected that he, let's see, where is it at here? That he survived the first phase of the eruption and fled along an alley, probably limping because of his bone infection that he got in the escape. And then he was hit by a massive stone block, perhaps a door jam, possibly hurled at him by the force of the pyroclastic flow. Which is the blazing hot mixture of gas, lava fragments, and other debris belched out by a volcano. And yeah, so they've been using a lot of technology that they did not have in previous attempts to kind of excavate the area, having engineers, restorers, and having technical tools like drones and 3D scanners to be able to take a look at the ground and see if they could find anything below.
Yeah, we're learning a lot about, you know, what happened there, and there was, yeah, that was not a good time to be alive over there.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly there, dude.
Yeah, it's like, okay, get up in the morning, and it's like, fire. Oh, that's not good. Yeah, let's run. Oh, now I got crushed by a stone. Okay, that's even worse.
Somebody pissed off Ares. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, this the risk you have living in. And around a volcano area.
Yeah.
Of course, they didn't know any better back then.
Yeah.
Well, they knew that it was a big mountain that would erupt on occasion. They just didn't really know how it worked.
They didn't know it would explode one day.
But the best they could do was, you know, have a ceremony or something to appease the gods. So.
Yeah. Busting the virgins.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I found out that was actually kind of true in some parts. They would totally throw virgins into the volcano.
Don't know if it did anything, but maybe.
Apparently not. Well, anyway. All right, next up. So, do you guys remember that guy who hacked into the Yahoo servers?
Yeah.
A while back?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's Canadian, dude.
History.
Canadian. Yeah. Well, they, you know, obviously they caught him and tried him, and this week he was given a 5-year prison sentence.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was also fined $250,000 U.S. So that's what, more Canadian?
Oh, that's like almost 500,000 Canadian.
Yeah. All right.
About 470.
Yep, so he pled guilty in November to 9 felony hacking charges. He hacked thousands of webmail accounts for 7 years, ending with his arrest last year. He would then charge customers to obtain another person's webmail password by tricking them to enter their credentials into a fake password reset page. The prosecutors allege that the Russian security service hired, he was Kazakhstan-born, to target email accounts using information obtained from the Yahoo hack. His attorneys say he did not know he was working for a Russian spy agency.
Right.
And a memorandum filed by U.S. law enforcement officials during the sentencing hearing, Naples described a, quote, pressing need to deter cyber criminals who's hacking lead to other criminal activity, including foreign espionage. So they're initially looking at like a 7-year, 10-month sentence, but went a little bit more lenient. I think his attorney was trying to go for 3 years and 9 months. So he kind of settled somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, he argued that the guy who was 19 at the time the hack began was simply a curious young man whose fascination with coding got the best of him and unintentionally led him to amass the wealth he eagerly displayed on most social media. He bore no intent to cause harm, and he sincerely regrets his actions.
Yeah, bullshit. Yeah, you ever known any hackers? Because,
I have.
Yeah, and you know it's bullshit.
I actually have known some hackers where that is actually true.
And oh.
There are people that genuinely just want to poke at sites, and then there are others who use that as a defense when they know they're going way further, working for others, foreign interests. Somebody should have told him he was hacking into Yahoo, where it's just old people.
It turns out that Yahoo hack thing was actually larger than anybody had expected.
Yeah.
It's like 13 million accounts. No, actually, it was all of them.
It's like 400 million, something like that.
Yeah.
So, all the people all the old people that forgot their original accounts and kept creating new ones.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up. So, for those who don't know, of course, Time Magazine put out their newest issue, and the new cover was actually made using 958 intelligence drones.
Intel drones.
Oh, Intel. Intel, yeah, like Intel inside. Yeah, those people. Yeah. Which should give you just enough to make you poo yourself in terror.
Yeah. If you saw
the Super Bowl and Korea at the Olympics. It's cool stuff, but yeah.
Given into the wrong hands, you basically have a kill decision.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, so they had this swarm set up about 100 meters tall. 328 feet, hovered over Folsom, California for a moment, just enough to get this photo set up, and they have a video showing how they made it and all that, which is some really cool stuff. Like that they have this whole drone setup that can coordinate all of these things well enough to create a pretty neat cover for Time.
Algorithms based on, I don't know if they're actually basing it on insect swarming, but it wouldn't surprise me too much.
Yeah. Have any of you guys seen that short film Slaughterbots on YouTube?
No.
Yeah, if you want to watch something that will just probably keep you up at night. Yeah, it's basically it's sort of like a, it was put up by this European organization called, I forgot what they're called. They're a bunch of AI researchers who put out a statement against AI weaponry.
Yeah.
And like the whole theme of the short film is that this company that is originally, you know, the people who made the drones that the US military uses now, they come up with these smaller, portable kind of intelligence drones, like the ones you can buy at Walmart, but have artificial intelligence and are loaded with guns, basically. And basically, at one point, as this stuff is being done, somebody manages to steal the intelligence from the U.S. government to make them, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. It is kind of terrifying, but...
Well, anyway. All right, so now on to our penultimate story of the night. Netflix has revealed a new series called The Magic Order, which is being used under the Millar World brand. It's a 6-part comic series. I'm guessing Mark Millar is going to be writing it.
Yeah, it's a new comic book series. Mm-hmm. Netflix's first comic books.
Yep.
So this is pretty neat. It's like Netflix, obviously being an all-digital company, is putting out a physical product. It's going to be, when is it going to be out? I don't know. It's written by Mark Millar and artist Olivier Coipel. They put out a trailer that has like a little bit of motion comic-y stuff to it, which looks neat. The series, they describe it as The Sopranos meets Harry Potter. Focus on a secret order of modern-day magicians to keep the world safe from supernatural threats. And their normal everyday job is that of magicians. Whereas at night, they're kind of wizards. And he described how he came up with the idea. As a kid, I always used to rationalize the fact that there were no monsters, since nobody's ever seen a monster or caught one on camera, with the idea that there are people who take care of this. That's why you never see it. So the idea is there's a family of wizards who have been around for thousands of years, and they take care of bad stuff. They live among us as stage magicians and other eccentric jobs during the day, but at night they get together and take care of problems. And sort of the whole crux of the story here in this series is that somebody has figured them out and is trying to kill them off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, okay, it hits comic shops on June 13th mm-hmm. for the first issue.
And I'd imagine if it does well enough, Netflix will probably do a TV adaptation of it.
Yeah, or maybe yeah. just a motion comic series.
Those are good, too. Yeah. You know? And they can also put that on Netflix.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it wouldn't be that difficult to work with.
Nope. Yeah, so this might be the start of the Millar cinematic universe.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Netflix say that they were working with Millar on more projects? So
yeah.
I knew yeah. that was coming.
Yeah.
All right, well. All right, and finally, our last story for the night, and it is, again, comic book related. Okay, so who here remembers Spawn?
Oh, I do.
Hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, we grew up in the 90s. Of course we remember Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was like the freaking... If you read comic books in the 90s, Spawn was the man.
Yeah, he was the 90s in comic form.
Yeah. Yeah, that first issue is still the biggest selling independent comic in history, as far as American comics are concerned. And, of course, Spawn was created by who?
Todd McFarlane.
Todd McFarlane. Todd McFarlane, do you guys know what he did before he created Spawn? He worked for DC and Marvel.
Yeah.
At Marvel, he was most famous for two things. He started out drawing the Hulk, and that was right around the time when what's his name was writing it. God, his name is completely escaping me. He's also the dude who wrote a bunch of the Star Trek novels, and he's the guy. I cannot remember it for the life of me.
Is he the guy that did the Thrawn trilogy?
No, that's
Drew Karpyshyn.
That's Timothy Zahn.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, it's not him. And that's Star Wars, not Star Trek.
Oh shit! You said Star. God, I need some caffeine, you guys.
You know what? Screw it. I'm looking it up right now because if I don't, I'm going to just. It's gonna drive me crazy. Let's see. There's like a bunch of them, but
there are so many of them. Peter David, maybe?
That's who it is, Peter David.
Okay.
Yeah, he basically was in charge of the Hulk in the early 90s, and McFarlane was one of the guys that worked on it. In fact, he's the guy who drew the that one famous cover of the Hulk being reflected in Wolverine's claws. Yeah, that was him. Yeah, and then after that, he became the artist on Spider-Man, and
for a stint.
Well, not just Spider-Man, it was the Amazing Spider-Man, and then he wanted more creative control, so Marvel gave him his own Spider-Man book, which again was called Spider-Man, and the first story arc was probably one of the worst written they've ever had.
Yeah,
the artwork was good, but. And so eventually McFarlane and, you know, a bunch of the other star artists at Marvel were just getting pissed off at all of the, you know, they were sort of breaking under Marvel's control, and they thought that, you know, they were making all this money for Marvel and they weren't really getting any residuals or anything. So they basically told Marvel to go shove it, and they went and formed Image Comics. And Spawn just so happened to be one of their original titles. The other original titles included, you know, Rob Liefeld's Youngblood. We don't like to talk about Rob Liefeld's Youngblood, like, at all.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Anyway, so Spawn came out. It was a massive success, you know. And, of course, McFarlane ended up, you know, later he formed McFarlane Toys. And, which, by the way, still very much alive. Still makes tons of money. Then the Spawn movie came out in the late 90s. I think it was 98.
Yeah, something like that, 98 or 99.
Yeah, it was right before. It was garbage.
It was
hot garbage. It stunk on ice. Why would you cast John Leguizamo as the Violator?
Don't know.
Because it was the 90s.
Yeah, that's true. Just had to tap into that Super Mario Brothers movie money.
Yeah, they hired John Leguizamo to play Luigi. They hired a Latino actor to play an Italian plumber.
Yeah.
No. Close, I guess.
I'm pretty sure he's... isn't he... Yeah. Other than that, there was the Spawn cartoon that ran on HBO, which was actually not bad.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Mostly because they could get away with stuff in that they couldn't with a PG-13 movie. Well, they're bringing Spawn back for another turnaround in the movies. This time, Jamie Foxx is going to be playing Spawn, and it's going to be directed by Todd McFarlane himself.
And it will probably be hot garbage.
Because, again, I don't know why people let comic book artists direct movies. There are very, very few times where there has worked out. Frank Miller co-directed Sin City.
Yeah.
And the only reason that movie worked so well was because of Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, they kind of split that movie up.
Yeah. And then they decided to let him give a solo directorial debut, which was The Spirit. Mm. Which was, again, hot garbage. And, So some other comic book artists that have directed movies have included Neil Adams. You know Neil Adams, right? He was like one of the big Batman and Green Lantern artists back in the day.
Yeah, and he directed...
He directed a movie for Troma.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
From the people that brought you the Toxic Avenger.
and they managed to screw that up?
Well, it was a B-movie, so it didn't really matter.
those Troma movies are, good for what they are, because they're completely aware that they suck.
Mm-hmm. Other comic book artists that have made movies includes, I can't remember what his name was, but he was the, I think, writer and artist for, do you guys remember Bloodshot?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it was like a really popular, well-hyped comic from Valiant that came out, when Valiant was like the hot deal. They actually rebooted it. For the record, the comic itself is actually pretty awesome. It just wasn't as big of a game changer as they were playing it up to be. Because remember, back in the early 90s, what was like the big bane of comic books back then? It was the speculators market.
Yeah.
Because once you started in the late 80s and early 90s, once you started getting a comic book issues that would sell in the millions, and the sort of the whole collector's market became a thing.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there were a lot of people trying to get what they thought would be the next big issue, big comic that would like then go on auction and sell for like thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
that's why there was like a glut of like first issues in the mid 90s for just a bunch of new comics. And all of them were trying to ride Spawn's coattails.
Yeah.
And Bloodshot was kind of caught up in that mess, even though it wasn't actually a bad comic by any means. Look, I'm going to be completely honest. As far as a businessman goes, Todd McFarlane hasn't really done that good outside of, McFarlane Studios and his toy line. All the other business ventures he's tried to do have basically failed.
Like his attempts to get into games.
Yeah.
Like McFarlane's Evil Prophecy.
Yeah.
That terrible, terrible game.
Yeah.
I like watching the Broken Pixels video where they realize every level is exactly the same.
Yep.
including power-ups or items are in the exact same spots every single mm-hmm. level, same enemies, and they expect you to play it over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, so I'm going to be honest. Part of me expects that this movie might end up just getting shelved.
Yeah,
because McFarlane, to be completely honest, is kind of a flake, and he's also had some legal trouble in the last few years with some key creators. So,
yeah, we'll see. It's, I mean, there's potential for a good Spawn movie. That's the really irritating thing.
Because Spawn is legit a good character, and
yeah, apparently Jamie Foxx is a huge Spawn fan.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, because they have a quote here. A few years back, I flew out to Arizona to meet the man behind one of the most incredible comic book characters in the universe, Todd McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's obviously a fan.
It didn't seem like they had to, you know, argue too much about specifics to get him on this.
Yeah, part of the appeal of like, okay, so McFarlane was. To be completely honest, McFarlane didn't really draw much of Spawn past the first 10 issues. Pretty much everything after that, he either would do work on the cover or he was the writer and inker. You know.
Yeah.
But those first 10 issues, man, they were wild, legitimately. Because McFarlane was one of those dudes who was the perfecter of using the borders of a comic book page to express yourself, you know, adding all kinds of fancy effects to the borders, you know, making them out of chains or cobwebs, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And he was one of the guys who sort of, I don't want to say he was one of the guys who sort of pioneered that, because I'm pretty sure Howard Chaykin did it before anyone else. Well, him and Jim Steranko, but, you know, those first 10 issues are just a wild read. I mean, in some ways, they're kind of passe now because, you know, Seinfeld is unfunny and that whole thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you were reading that shit in the 90s. It was fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Legitimately. But, all right, so I do believe we've got a show, folks.
That we do.
And what a show it was. So, for, I guess I would like to remind our listeners, if you've got anything you want to write into the show, have something you want us to read on air, questions, comments, your crazy, insane political manifesto, you can write to us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. I would like to repeat that, letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and other places where hot, delicious sound soup is completely served up hot and fresh for your ear tongues. Yeah, I'm going at this at a different direction this time. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining. Yeah. And as for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logia, I'd like to say good night, sleep tight, don't let the ear mouse bite, so you're going to want to wear some earplugs or something like that. Good night, folks.